Remember when watching your favorite show meant turning on the television? Well, most of today's viewers still watch traditional TV, but many are also watching TV on the web, on computers, cell phones, and iPods. What might this mean for the future of television? Fred Siebert, creative director and co-founder of Next New Networks, John Gottfried, CEO of Devour TV, and Jeffrey Drummond, president of A La Carte Communications, join me now to talk about the changing face of television. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's start with you, Fred. For those who aren't familiar with your company, what is Next New Networks?
Next New Networks is a collection of internet TV networks in categories from automotive to animation to political humor, trying to address the unspoken needs of various communities out there in the world.
And when you mention animation, you were president of Hanna-Barbera Cartoons for 5 years. Don't you still produce some shows for Nickelodeon?
I do, and for Cartoon Network and a variety of other places too.
So if you're doing that, isn't that enough?
You would think so. The opportunity to start to talk to originally my community of animators around the world was just too great to give up.
And Jeffrey, A La Carte Productions also does both over-the-air TV and internet TV.
Yes, although not at the level that either John or Fred do. We're primarily a producer of cooking shows for and how-to shows for public television, working with, having started with Julia Child, so kind of pioneered that world, but really the show that overlaps most into the internet is a show called America's Test Kitchen, which has established a very kind of successful multi-platform
The most
venture.
Successful cooking show with a host who wears a bow tie.
Exactly.
John, you're a writer. You wrote the New York Restaurant Guide, among other publications. You were one of the founders of the Gourmet Garage stores. So what drew you to the web?
Great opportunity and also a dissatisfaction. The fact is, I hate saying it this way, but the Television Food Network had sort of abdicated its responsibility towards food. We thought we had a chance to start a new Television Food Network. And there's also some macroeconomic terms,
The TV Food Network has adjusted to what the audience seems to want. Isn't that the way the media work in general?
Well, I think that they've fallen out of love with the subject that they're trying to sell. They're not in love with food, and we are. We're passionate about it.
So your thing is called Devour TV. What kinds of programs do you offer, and are they all original?
Yeah. We've shot several hundred episodes, maybe 55 television quality shows at this point, and they run. Last week we shot Sturgeon in a Box. We did a one of those Lesko type commercials about selling sturgeon. In 3 weeks you can raise it up to caviar size, and if your sturgeon happens to die, well, you can always smoke it and still sell it for $16.99 a pound. Supplement your income.
Is there a way, I throw this out to all of you, is there a way to measure audiences that's comparable to the Nielsen TV ratings?
Right now, I think what we all do is measure literally the people who view our things. You can count views.
But there's a difference between whether they just pop in and pop out or whether they actually stay with you.
Every place that we all distribute has a different way of counting views, but I think more or less you want the majority of your episode to have been seen, and that gets sort of registered up. Also, there are more and more technologies that are popping up, as you can imagine, that are underneath that telling you more and more detail about your views.
Does web TV rely on advertising to pay the way? Do you, John, do you take advertising?
Absolutely. You have sponsorships. You have advertising. You've got the what are called banners and skyscrapers. The ways of monetizing this are just there's a lot of depth in monetizing.
So when you go
if
to
it happens.
When you go to ad agencies or and say you should be advertising on our programs rather than are you competing with the other television or
absolutely.
So you're saying here's why you should advertise on our programs.
Absolutely.
What's the argument that you give?
Our argument really simply is this is where your audience is going.
But does it – I know – I remember – I used to work in advertising. And
I'm sorry. So did I.
Yeah, well, we all have to pay for our sins.
Exactly.
And I remember as cable TV became bigger and bigger and people realized that the audience was going to become more and more diffused, you couldn't just run a commercial on Channel 9 and expect a fair number of people to be watching it. You know, now it could be anywhere. And I'd imagine that this just makes it even more diffuse, that advertisers are worried, well, how many people can I reach in all of these different venues?
It's absolutely the case. But like in cable TV, I was one of the earliest employees in the modern age of cable television. There are advertisers who define themselves as going where the audience will be going. At MTV, where I worked, our very first advertiser was Pepsi, and 28 years later, that's still their biggest advertiser. Ford Motor is another example of a company that is always ahead of its audience. So there are a lot
of
people...
Well, up until now, anyway.
We'll see
what the bailout brings.
Right, we will. But we will be hopeful for all of them and for us. But I think the truth is that advertisers are a conservative lot, and they take their time making a decision that a new medium is worthwhile. Cable didn't come into its own for 10 years.
Well, Jeffrey, you produce most of your programming for public television, so
yes.
You don't have to worry about sponsors, do you?
Oh, we totally have to worry about sponsors. It's really the sponsorships that support and underwrite the production of the shows. But what we really look at, and I go back to the Nielsen ratings in television, whatever the various metric counts in internet and other sources are, you almost look at them as indicators rather than exact things. And they're indicators of which show is doing best, which show is doing not so well, and so on, rather than exact counts. And I think that there are so many different platforms now that programs run on that nobody's really getting an accurate account of how many people are watching, whether it's Fred shows or my shows or whatever. And ideally what we do when we talk to sponsors is to say, we're doing a show that will be broadcast on public television. We will be reaching somewhere between 1.5 to 2 million people a week. We'll also have an internet component on that show where we have more and varied information on the same thing.
And the internet actually gives you a more accurate picture of just how many people have watched, because you can say not around so many. You can say, well, we actually can tell you that 152,000 people watched this show.
Yeah, the fact is there's not a lot of clarity as to who those people are yet, but we're doing more and more research to figure it out. We know who writes to us, who our emails come from, who our comments come from. There's a lot of methods that we're starting to use to extract the audience.
My guests are Fred Siebert, who's creative director and co-founder of Next New Networks, Jeffrey Drummond, president of A La Carte Communications, and John Gottfried, CEO of Devour TV. This is
Devour.tv.
.tv, I'm so sorry. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So when people want to go to Devour, they just type in Devour.tv?
Mm-hmm. Rather than
.com. And you hope
that
they make it their homepage, of course.
Well, stickiness is a very important part of the whole thing. One of the things, I think video, the internet is turning into a video medium. And that's where our abilities, everybody here really is working on that.
But most people would tell you that the internet, at least on this level, is going to attract younger viewers mostly. Older people are just unlikely to watch TV on the internet. Isn't that true?
I think that the internet always starts with younger people and always ends with everyone. And I think that in every case of every new application that has come on board, when I started on email, I was 42 years old, and I was the oldest guy in my place on email. Everybody was young. Now my 88-year-old mother and my 86-year-old father-in-law are on email much more than I am. It is that kind of medium that as comfort comes in, as ease of use comes in, everybody finds something useful for themselves.
But your kids and grandkids are texting more than emailing now, right?
Yes, but they're using the internet more and more.
Right, and they're watching TV
exactly.
On mobile and so on. But that comes down to what we were talking about earlier, which is the quality of programming. Ultimately, people are going to relate to programming and the importance of the message. I think our terrific political campaign that we just got through is an example of how many people turned in to watch something that became very important to them.
Well, the campaign really has changed the whole concept of campaigning and really made the internet much more important. But anybody who teaches a college course will tell you, when they ask their kids, where do you get your information? Do you listen to the news on radio? Do you watch it, the morning shows on television? Or do you read it on the internet or listen on the internet? The internet gets about 98% of the hands raised.
Well,
but of
why
course,
wouldn't it?
Well, because I like to listen to Morning Edition on my radio and read the New York Times by flipping through pages.
I understand that, but why wouldn't a more convenient medium be a place that more and more people every day wanted to use? One of the reasons we love radio is its convenience and its ease. But I've added radio podcasting into my listening pattern. And now I listen to WNYC regularly over the internet because I travel a lot and I like to listen to it.
And by the way, we love the internet.
Of course.
Now we get responses from listeners from all over the world. I got the most wonderful one last year from a woman from Japan who said, I started listening to your show to improve my English and then I discovered it was interesting.
Of course, the internet.
Of course, I was teaching her only certain things.
Right.
The nature of this conversation, though, has ignored one of the major things about the internet being new and original. It's not just a medium for reproducing what's on TV more conveniently or with the time lapse. 20% of everybody is watching their television over the internet, but the major shows on television. But
and we'll get to that. I was going to get to that, okay. But it's okay.
But the internet
now, John.
The internet has. I'm not even watching your sheets over there. But the internet has the most unusual ability because you don't have to be Universal Studios in order to produce good quality entertainment on it. Everything is nowadays being shot on digital and edited on Macintosh, and so what a couple of years ago would have cost hundreds of millions of dollars to start a new television network is still intimidatingly expensive from an individual point of view, but totally affordable.
Are you tied to the television concept of length of show, half hour, an hour?
Actually, we're moving much more towards it because our programming is 15 to 20 minutes. But what we do is we break that down. I think one of the major insights that we have had is that this having to make a decision every minute, 45 seconds and everything, keeps you glued to that screen. What we do is we segue a number of our productions that we've done in any one week, and so that it plays for 20 minutes, you can make yourself a cup of tea, and entertainment will still be coming up. What this has done is, on the internet, 4 seconds of boredom is click death. On television, you can watch 22 minutes of boredom. What's the difference? The expectation that the next minute will be more interesting. So if you provide a more television-like experience, which is the future of the internet, you have these things so that they run like an interesting pre-programmed jukebox. You can access any of the shows anytime you want, but you could also just let it run, and people will stay with it in the expectation, in our case with Devour.tv, of course, it's true, that the next thing will be interesting or more interesting.
Well, Fred, aren't most of next new network shows only about 3 minutes long?
Well, they're probably in the area of 5 to 10 is what I would think.
How much can you cram into 5 to 10 minutes?
Great 5 to 10 minutes. Uh-huh. I mean, the truth is, John has it exactly right. The internet has no forgiveness. We have an expectation that it will keep us engaged, and if it does not, we move on. The truth is, we started that way because of the limitations of technology. Delivering the information at that length was hard enough 3 years ago when we really started out.
Because streaming, right? And streaming has improved over the years, but it's still expensive to stream, isn't it?
It's very expensive. It was the single biggest shock to my system when I saw how much it took to deliver our stuff. But, you know, again, technology, capitalism have wonderful lubricants to innovate, and the innovation just in the last 3 years in this area has been stunning.
But isn't the opportunity, when you talk about the quick attention span and the quick drop-off of interest if something doesn't work, when you're on the internet and you have a setup like yours, if you get tired of watching a show or listening to a show, you click and you don't necessarily go to another website, you just go to another program in the archive.
Absolutely.
If you're watching a show on NBC or PBS or whatever and you don't like the show, you jump the network to another channel.
And by the way it ever was,
remote control has changed the way we watch television as well.
Totally.
I started in this business as a music fan, and as I do my historical research, on a Benny Goodman record, they worried about the introduction, because if they didn't get you in the introduction, you weren't going to stick for the song. As it ever was, the mediums demand our engagement. And the fact is, in our medium of the internet, the fact that demands and the standards, by the way, no matter what anyone think, are higher on the internet for engagement.
And those Benny Goodman records lasted 3 minutes, and they sure jammed an awful lot of interesting music
exactly.
into those 3 minutes. My guests are Fred Siebert, creative director and co-founder of Next New Networks, Jeffrey Drummond, president of A La Carte Communications, and John Gottfried, CEO of Devour.tv. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with John Gottfried, CEO of Devour.tv, Jeffrey Drummond, the president of A La Carte Communications, and Fred Siebert, creative director and co-founder of Next New Networks. And we're talking about programming on the internet. I suspect that as it becomes less expensive to broadcast over the internet, we're going to see more and more of our television on it. Years ago, we had Andy Grove of Intel, who said that he didn't really see the future of television as being high-definition TV, but as being the internet. I told him that I prefer to watch TV on a larger screen, but what would you argue are the advantages and disadvantages of both? Do you think one's going to eliminate the other?
I don't think so. I think that you're talking about two different topics in a way. I think that the quality... One is when you talk about high definition, you're talking about quality of image.
And a bigger screen, usually.
Yeah, but it could be small. I could pull out my iPhone and show you a seven-minute clip from a TV series that we're in the middle of shooting, and it looks terrific, and you can watch it, and it's engaging. Similarly, you could see something like Blair Witch Project, which also may really engage you, and it looks like crap.
Well, they say you have to watch epics in the movie theater, but at least you have to watch it on a widescreen TV.
My 2-inch transistor radio that I discovered the monkeys on didn't eliminate my interest in the highest end of sound. They both exist in my life simultaneously. They're both okay with me.
But who says that your television can't get the internet and the internet get television? That is the future.
Isn't that what you did with the James Beard Awards this year?
Yeah. Well, it came out over Bravo. We co-produced it with Bravo.
So you did it as an internet?
We did it as an internet. They produced it digitally and distributed it on Bravo.com. But your television set, your internet, it's the same cable coming in, guys. And it goes to your TV, it goes to your computer, and there's ways. I mean, that's what TiVo is doing right now.
One of our best distributors is TiVo, and among our most engaged viewers are our TiVo viewers who watch our programming over their television sets.
So there was an article in yesterday's New York Times about Michael Eisner, who's also gotten involved in new media and web TV. He's predicting the demise of traditional broadcast TV, and I'm getting the feeling from you that wouldn't predict that you think there's a place in the world for both.
Nothing goes away except for maybe vaudeville.
Well, they predicted, of course, that television would kill radio, and look at what happened.
And then
that radio would kill
the
movies.
It all stays.
On the other hand, computers definitely killed the typewriter.
Okay, they killed the machine.
There are people. I always get
a
guest or two.
Andy Rooney still types.
I get any number of guests who say, I'm not getting rid of my typewriter. I don't trust this thing.
No, television is more focused. I mean, for all the complaints about 500 channels, it's still a hell of a lot smaller than 4 billion websites. So it reaches a much more mass appeal. You know, somewhere 5-8 years from now, we'll be having this discussion again and we'll have an answer.
But aren't all the networks cannibalizing their own market by putting their programs online?
I've
always wondered why you watch Grey's Anatomy on TV with all the commercials when you can watch it virtually commercial-free online.
I think the challenge for everybody is figuring out the value of a new medium. I know we went through it with cable TV. I know the magazine business went through it when, you know, I came to New York in 1969. A magazine stand was about 4 feet wide, and now there are whole stores that are magazine stores, and somehow there is value extracted in each one. And I think the truth is, in our medium, we are still in the process of defining value.
Do you think that the networks learned a lesson from cable TV because they went into it late? They saw it as competition, and only a few really made a major commitment and now are paying the ones that didn't are paying the price. We have NBC and Fox, the parent companies of Hulu, one of the most popular television websites. They're not seeing Hulu as competing with themselves?
They don't have a choice. They're going to be watching it on YouTube. They may as well control it.
They are trying desperately, and God bless them for doing it, to be train companies turning into airplane companies. And I think they've always had a challenge. NBC, CBS, ABC were all in cable very early, approached it incorrectly, and got out. It took NBC 25 years to get back in.
And now they're very big in television.
Exactly.
I mean, in cable.
In fact, right now, cable is saving their bacon on the broadcast side of things. And I think the truth is that they are trying very, very hard not to get into the internet, but to protect their businesses. And the problem with innovation is it is not a world of protection. It is a world of the future.
Well, since viewers can watch shows that they missed on the network websites, is the concept of prime time likely to become obsolete?
Already is.
Yeah, I think it is. I think that it's disappearing. But I think that prime time, all the different, the biggest challenge to the television networks, the primary stations, are the 400 or 500 other stations that are broadcasting on that same set. As you said, Leonard, the remote control has so changed that game. But I think all the rest of the media are cumulative, and I think when they look at their TV broadcast, they're looking to add to it on the internet. I think that the people who watch Grey's Anatomy on TV are probably more likely to watch the episode again on the internet than the people who didn't see it at all.
Studies show that many people watch TV while they're surfing the net.
Well, I used to watch TV and read Rolling Stone at the same time, you know, as it ever was. Mm-hmm. You know, things don't really change that much. Human behavior doesn't change that much.
But multitasking, of course, you don't watch either. I don't know if you know about those studies.
Yeah.
You didn't get all, well, I don't know which one won.
Watching Starsky and Hutch and reading about the Grateful Dead, I don't know that either of them had to win, but I had a good time doing it.
ADD.
Exactly.
Well, the Next New Networks has 100 networks, doesn't it?
We're going to launch 100 networks. Right now we've launched about 20 plus.
Where do you get your content? Is it all produced by you, or do people send in stuff?
It is a combination of stuff sent in and stuff that we make, you know, at our studio. But as we were talking about off air earlier, it's kind of irrelevant to us. When I worked at MTV, we didn't make any of the music videos either.
But they've abandoned music videos now.
Yeah, but that's a different issue. I mean, the issue is, how do you take your, in our case, brands, and create programming or cause programming to be seen by their fans that are in love?
But, for example, when Next New Networks launched Obama Girl on the Barely Political Network, whose idea was it? Was it yours, or did the Obama Girl people send it into you?
There was a guy named Ben Rellis who did it on his own. He was an employee at an advertising agency, had this idea. He launched it. It exploded, as we all know. And through a mutual friend, we met each other, and we realized that we could be helpful to his ambitions in Barely Political, and he could be helpful to our ambitions for Next New Networks.
Now, John talked about how digital has made it a lot more cost-effective to shoot television shows nowadays. But is that true for animation as well? I know you launched the first cartoon podcast through Frederator Studios. I suspect that's named after you.
Yeah, that would be right.
But can you animate inexpensively these days?
Yeah, I mean, the quick answer is yes. We don't need to get into the weeds. But the truth is technology always helps you do things more efficiently. Then the question is, what do you do with that efficiency?
John, you talked about your shows going for 20 minutes or to a half hour or so. How long do they stay up on the site?
Forever. It's sort of like a library. We may launch a new channel of 30 minutes every week, but you can access any of those shows.
Really? So I can see a show that was one of your first and see how far you've come?
Amen.
Do you feel you've come along? How long ago did you put Devour.tv on?
Well, officially, of course, we launched in June with the Beard Awards, the James Beard Awards. But there was a lot of very embarrassing adolescence before that.
Well, this is the learning process, right? Mm-hmm. And also the technology, you say, keeps on changing. So you have to keep on changing with the technology.
Yeah, that's what makes it exciting.
You wanted to add something, Jeffrey.
No, I was just saying it's interesting with food shows in particular that what we find, and even looking at some of the internet statistics, that the driving force in the internet with food is still recipes and recipe interest and downloading. If you look at allrecipes.com and Food Network and a bunch, probably 80 to 90% of the people that go to those sites are looking for recipe and recipe downloads. And when you watch a public television show as well as Food Network show, you'll see tags all throughout the show that says for recipes and other information visit.
Mm-hmm. But that's what
also they also are often selling a cookbook in connection with it. But I can go back to this. I can watch that dish being made 10, 15 times if I'm watching it on the internet.
Exactly. And that's why sites like americastestkitchen.com have grown, because people will go there to watch the site. So if you're watching somebody making a risotto, you can see the broth being reduced and when to add, and you can actually look at it and get those cues, and you have that. But your original interest came from watching, whether it's Chris Kimball or Lydia Bastianich or even Julia Child, making that and talking about how to do it. And that's what brings you to the internet. And I still believe that that is the foundation platform right now for bringing one to the other.
We have a slightly different point of view on that. To me, that's mostly data lookup, you know, technique and stuff like that. I think that more like Anthony Bourdain, that what you want to do is do food through entertainment. If you're giving the information, we have a show, Spin the Bottle, which is, you know, people want to learn about wine but not turn into snobs. So if you do a Jeopardy-type game show, people are laughing along with this thing, but they're absorbing the information. So everything that we do is filtered through the thing. Do we give them the information through entertainment?
My guests are John Gottfried, CEO of Devour.tv, Fred Seibert, who's the creative director and co-founder of Next New Networks, and Jeffrey Drummond, president of A La Carte Communications. What impact do you think the current economic crisis will have on the web TV business?
It's not going to be fun. I don't think it's going to be fun for anybody to be struggling through any kind of economic things. But at the same time, you know, what often happens in these environments is that the people that are in there for reasons other than building kind of go away if they were in there just for fun.
We've actually found it's just exploded in the reverse. We just happen to be in a very good position right now, and a lot of people are coming to us for our content. You know, when you've got the types of things, when you have hundreds and hundreds of shows, everybody up on the internet, all of the major corporations, know they need a video component. They're scared to death of production, you know, having to go through it and create their own voices. So when you have somebody, the production companies that are represented here, people are very, very interested in talking.
And from an advertiser standpoint, what we have seen is one, viewers are moving to the internet in larger and larger numbers. and advertisers are looking for a more efficient way to find them. And what our kinds of programming philosophies do is give them a very clear way to find an audience, and that always works better.
Now, you represent three companies that are on the internet. How many TV producers are there right now, providers?
Millions.
Millions?
Millions.
Mm-hmm.
Have you
TV
gone to
producers
YouTube lately?
On the internet.
Well, YouTube, of course, is another way of doing the same thing, isn't it?
With less kind of continuous branding attached to it. In other words, you don't really know where to find whom, except for a couple of people who have really created their own little mini networks on YouTube.
But Barack Obama is doing radio chats on YouTube.
Well, they're not radio chats. I saw them on CNN the other night, and they said his internet address is now. I mean, they defined it differently. But my 11-year-old was an internet TV producer the other day with a new camera I gave him. He put it up within minutes of putting it on. There are millions of producers.
I really would define things very differently. Somebody who puts up a video or even a series of videos is not really an internet producer. A person has to have a show, an amalgamation of shows, a creation of a network like that. And in that crowd, I'd say there may be dozens or a couple of hundred at absolute most.
Isn't that the big problem? You really have to create a brand consciousness so that people will come to you. Otherwise, I'm just going to have to go through a million different videos to find something I might like.
I just couldn't disagree more. I think that anybody who makes video...
I'm so excited when people disagree.
Right, I understand. I think anybody who makes video and puts it up is a video producer. Are they a professional producer? Are they a
consumer?
Do I
want to watch your kids' show, your kids' piece?
You might.
Well, it depends, because Fred's kids' show may just be that show that tweaks the imagination and gets picked up and gets put on David Letterman's show or somewhere, and all of a sudden there are 5 million people watching it and everybody wants them to produce another and another.
I think the rise of blues and rock and roll proved, or should have proved once and for all, that the standards by which we in the media define what is acceptable and what isn't are just bogus.
Well, actually, it's interesting that you bring that up, because the reason that rhythm and blues and rock and roll did so well was because independent record companies came along, and when the majors wouldn't record that kind of stuff, and they made it available, and then some of them became majors like Atlantic Records.
Exactly. Well, you know, an illiterate blues man who taught himself his instrument in Como, Mississippi, could become a worldwide star as much as Johnny Mathis could on Columbia Records.
So I'm going to ask each of you, if I wanted to watch some of the programming that you produce, what would I have to type into my computer? Begin with you, Fred.
Oh, nextnewnetworks.com is the fastest way to access all the programming that we make.
And
you could probably find our stuff, which is
the a la carte.
Yeah, I'd rather at alacartetv.com, and that would direct you to various places, or to americastestkitchen.com.
And John?
Devour.tv.
That's all? I just type in devour.tv?
And a channel will come up and play for 20 minutes, or you can go to any of the headings and access the shows.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us, John Gottfried, CEO of Devour.tv, Jeffrey Drummond, President of A La Carte Communications, and Fred Seibert, Creative Director and co-founder of Next New Networks. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.